If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Good morning. A lot to talk about with what has become one of my favorite guests, Chicago practicing veterinarian Dr. Dana Varble, who is the chief veterinary officer at VMX, the North American Veterinary Community. VMX is a veterinary conference, which actually I want to talk to you about off the air. I forgot to ask you about Dr. Varble, but on the air, since we're on the air now, a lot to talk about. I've been chatting about dogs and cats and rabbits sold at pet stores. And some number of years ago, Chicago pretty much unanimously passed an ordinance that said, no, they can't be sold because of where they are sourced from, predominantly puppy mills. It's like everybody knows that. And to do otherwise, in my view, would be to support puppy mills. So a couple of pet stores said, what we're going to do is we're going to call the places where we get them from nonprofits. They're going to fill out paperwork so they can be nonprofits. And then we're not going to do anything different, except try to confuse reporters at the Chicago Tribune, who did do a story to track all this, because it's difficult to track because there are brokers involved and third parties and fourth parties now. There's no transparency about where they get these animals. So I am curious because the veterinary associations who I work with have said, though, that veterinarians actually feel differently about this. And as I speak to veterinarians individually or collectively, especially younger veterinarians, especially students, and by the way, veterinary technicians and nurses, the backbone of the industry, in my opinion, they pretty much all say, we don't want dogs or cats or rabbits sold at pet stores. So I'm curious as to how you, a leader in the profession, feels about all this.
Well, you know, Steve, probably one of the biggest issues with pet stores in general, and you know I work with exotics, so this is an issue even for me
as an
exotic practitioner. When you go into a pet store and you buy a pet, it's usually an impulse buy. You know, it's not something that you thought through, that you've researched, that you're ready to really embrace. And that's my biggest concern with, you know, that type of setting for selling something like a dog or a cat or a rabbit that is a decade over commitment. And you said the key word there, the key word that you said is transparency. And, you know, if you have a dog or a cat or a rabbit, you should really know where it came from. You should be able to have that information, especially as we're learning more about animal health and what role genetics and background play and how they were raised affecting long-term behavior. It really does, you know, we understand that's a huge commitment, but it's so easy for us when we get in that situation to make an impulse buy and not think it through. And people don't do it, I think, maliciously. You know, they just fall in love.
Oh, of course. And we have data to demonstrate, dogs in particular, but cats too, especially puppies and kittens, why we fall in love. We're almost hardwired as human beings to fall in love with these animals. So let me follow up on what you're saying a bit here. So if you were to go into an animal shelter tomorrow, which is a great place, I'm sure you agree, to get a dog or a cat.
Absolutely, or
a responsible rescue, or a legitimate breeder of English setters or golden retrievers, whatever the breed is.
Yeah.
You are going to be asked questions to ensure that you are a responsible home. For example, you might have to show a contract if you rent to indicate that pets are allowed. You will be asked a variety of different questions. As you should be, because of what you said, we're not buying a washing machine here. We're buying a real living thing. And, you know, one of the defenses, by the way, is there's a lemon law here in Illinois, so you could return it. Well, it's not a washing machine. You know, you don't want to even return it if there is, and often there is, a medical and or behavioral problem. Getting back to your point, though, you will be asked all sorts of questions to make sure that you're the right person. And in fact, No responsible breeder ever sells to a pet store for that reason. Having said that, you walk into a pet store and you point at the little puppy, and the guy at, or the woman at the pet store is maybe 18 years old, it's just a summer job or whatever, says, okay. And the only question they ask is, will that be cash or charge? And that's it.
Yeah. And that's just it, Steve. Is, you know, we want to not only have the pet owning experience good for the owner and good for the pet, but, I mean, it should be, this is a huge part of who we are as humans, you know. Steve and I speak a lot about the human-animal bond, and, you know, it can be so fragmented, and there can be so much, for lack of a better word, damage done to that when a pet is bought as an impulse buy.
Yeah.
Whereas if a pet is a cultured, you know, if it's something you've worked towards, if it's something where you've put a lot of thought into it, it really, and not to say, you know, we've all had impulse buys that have worked out, right? But, you know, the advantage of a rescue or of a humane society, you know, I look at back, I got my last dog came from a rescue. And the advantage that we had was that there was an introduction period. You know, I had information on her from the folks that were fostering her, even from her previous owners, believe it or not.
Hmm.
And I was able to use that to make our situation better. And when you buy a pet from a pet store, you're not going to have that information, even if it's just genetics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't often get that. You don't get that connection, and you don't get that understanding. And more than anything, we just want the pet owning experience to be good for everyone. It should be a great experience. It should be a wonderful part of your life.
Yeah, so bottom line, I'm going to put you on the spot here, but but bottom line, do you agree that going to a pet store to buy, we should talk about where to get, I mean, this would be a great discussion to have, Dr. Varbal, because you mentioned exotics earlier, and what you mean by that are pet birds, pet parrots, that you work with pet reptiles, and which includes snakes as well as lizards, pet tortoises and turtles, and hamsters and gerbils and guinea pigs, all of that, and ferrets, all of that. And where do you get those guys from, you know, which is a separate conversation, but when it comes to dogs, we know that pet stores never get them from a responsible breeder. So if they're getting them from not a responsible breeder, it leaves only one or two viable sources, not so viable, but one or two possible sources available. So would you agree that no, dogs and cats, and for that matter, rabbits, should not be sold at pet stores?
I would agree, Steve. I would absolutely agree. And I think it would be great for us to have a discussion sometime about where to get reptiles and pet birds responsibly as well.
And that's
because
complicated.
Because there are some great resources out there.
Yes, you got it. We will talk about that because I think that's really, I think that is
it
such,
is.
Yeah. And the other thing I have about pet stores, so you may have noticed it gets kind of cold here in January, and you know, and you've, you know, I walk into a pet store and there are things you notice and I notice that others might not notice. So you walk into that pet store, there's no double door like some restaurants have, so you're not freezing when people walk into the room, if we ever get to eat inside again at restaurants.
And maybe
and you open the door and this big gust of wind comes, it's 40 below, and you've got a bird 20 feet away, or a reptile that's cold-blooded 20 feet away from that door, that is so incredibly dangerous even for them. And, you know, so yes, there is a lot to talk about in that regard. I want to talk about something else that, you know, I've read now several different surveys that have indicated veterinary visits because of the pandemic, and solely because of that, are on the decline. And while I can understand people's concerns or hesitation about not going to the veterinarian the way kind of you have to now, which is calling ahead, saying, I'm here, and either a technician comes out to the parking lot, or if that's not the case, you just stand at the door, and then the technician says, okay, hand me the pet, and you're not in the exam room with the animal. So people are hesitant about that, or maybe they are personally just hesitant about going out anywhere themselves, so they don't go anywhere, including the veterinarian. I want to talk about the impact of those visits being down potentially on our health as well as on the pets. When we come back, Dr. Dana Varbal on WGN. Back on 720 WGN, Steve Dale's Pet World with Dr. Dana Varbal of the North American Veterinary Community. She isn't only just kind of with that community, but she is the chief veterinary officer. So briefly explain what we call in the industry, NAVC, the North American Veterinary Community is, Dr. Varbal.
Sure. We are a community of veterinarians. Our job is to bring the latest medical and surgical advances and the education around those to your local veterinarian to try and improve pet health everywhere in the world.
And you do so, among other ways, with the largest veterinary conference on this side of the equator, I think, or something.
I believe so.
Yeah, or one of the two. There's another in Mexico. We've talked about this. I think they are actually larger than you. I got to get you down there sometime. And you'll,
I know.
What we'll do is we'll both stand at the door and say, you're number 3,003. We'll count individual people. So we were talking about veterinary visits because of the pandemic and solely because of that being potentially on the decline. How does that potentially impact our health and certainly the health of our animals?
Well, I mean, the biggest concern with that is we want to make sure that every animal is getting routine care, right? Their annual exams, and usually for senior pets, we're looking at biannual exams, their routine blood work, x-rays, and of course, extremely important, their routine vaccinations when they're due for those. Because we don't want to have we don't want to miss anything. You know, pets are not as good at communicating their pain, their medical issues. So we want to make sure that we're on top of those things so that we don't miss an opportunity to treat something early in the process.
Well, there's a lot to cover with all that. So I want to talk about vaccines. Yeah, vaccines, you know, so some of them or a few of them, rabies, leptospirosis, rabies is the law. So if you miss that, you know, and there aren't rabies police. I mean, there aren't people checking dog tags, you know. I mean, so there's no way necessary, but this is a real concern I have, and leptospirosis as well as rabies is something that human beings can get as well. So we do want to protect our animals, to protect them, but also to protect us.
Absolutely. The last thing we would want right now is another health concern for everyone. So extremely important that our animals are up to date for those zoonotic diseases. And I'll add to that a little bit, Steve. We want to make sure that we're up to date on flea and tick control.
Yes.
So important to prevent illnesses in people as well.
Well, right. You know, so I am concerned because if veterinary visits are down, and backing up to where you first started, that's preventive care checkups in the first place. And people say, oh, I know my pet is just fine. I can tell. My answer to that is, how do you know that?
You know, you don't always. But, you know, there's so many good signs. And, you know, this is what I always tell all of my pet owners when they come in. No one knows your pet like you do, right? Mm-hmm. No one knows if something's changed, something's different, something's odd. And I can tell you right now that veterinarians are so busy with people noticing those little changes in their pets because they're spending more time with them. And while it may be overwhelming to all of us, it's also so, so important to make a note of those things. Because we really do have an opportunity to catch things early and change how we treat diseases in that way.
Yeah, so veterinarians are telling me, and this is Animal Pain Awareness Month, that they're telling me that they're being inundated, for cats in particular, from clients who say, I didn't know my cat would do that or would do that or would do that. And being that this is the month to talk about it, that they are also getting increased number of phone calls saying, my cat's doing this. Does this mean my cat is in pain?
Yeah, cats are especially challenging, right? They're so sneaky. They don't always show us when they're in pain, or it can be extremely subtle. So I've had clients describe things like, well, he used to jump on the couch, or he used to jump to the top level of his cat tree, and now he only jumps to the second level. And believe it or not, those little changes are often extremely significant. things that you might think, it's no big deal. Maybe she doesn't like the third level of the cat tree anymore. I don't know. We got a different couch. Maybe it's just that. Usually there's actually more going on there. And it's so important to tell your veterinarian those things because those little changes mean the world.
Well, indeed. And I want to talk about cats in particular because cats, we'll do some ethology 101 here, being both predator and prey. They have a different perspective than dogs do. So dogs, they actually do oftentimes mask pain, but not as much as cats. And cats, if a cat is limping, either the cat has just injured himself or herself and a trauma has just occurred, or maybe more likely the cat has just gotten worse over a period of time and is now so incredibly bad because of cat's ability to deal with pain. So I want to offer some tips for people, and I'll rattle a few off, and then as I do, you could think of some more.
Sounds good.
Yeah, where your cat might be in pain, and people, you know, you mentioned one, that a cat is hesitant about jumping places or a hesitancy about going up or down stairs or maybe just doesn't do it anymore or walks kind of like sideways and zigzaggy to go up or down stairs. Those are signs as well. But other signs could be just the cat standing there, closing his eyes and looking all the face and the body kind of scrunched up. And that is something that, yeah, you say yes because you know.
Yeah.
But it's something that we might not notice, especially in our own cats, because I would argue that anyone coming in from the outside may notice things may perhaps more readily because these things happen so gradually over a course of time. And what's more, something like that is so subtle. Another example is a cat that's just laying down, not on its side, again, kind of looking scrunched up, and the tail is going back and forth like, I'm really mad, but there's no one there and nothing to be mad about. That cat might be hurting. And definitely any change in the way the cat interacts with family members, any change in feeding, anything like that. Can you give just one or two more here?
You know, the big one that I hear that I think people often put off to not necessarily being in pain is changes in litter box behavior.
Yes.
And I think people think, oh, it's because they're having stomach upset or because they're having, you know, bladder issue. But sometimes they just don't want to get in the litter box or it's painful to squish in there or step in there, something like that. So that is another subtle sign that we don't often attribute to pain that can be painful.
Oh, absolutely.
This is going to sound like a really weird one, but it's one we actually see a lot. Changes not in, they're maybe eating, but they're eating differently. I see a lot of cats with dental pain and the owners notice that they're chewing funny. It's because they actually have a tooth that hurts.
Yeah, you're absolutely, of course, you're absolutely right. Dr. Dana Farbel of the North American Veterinary Community, as always, thank you very much. And by the way, mark your calendars, September 23rd, Wynn Feline Foundation, W-I-N-N, Feline Foundation, a free webinar. I will be giving that, and I have the honor of doing so with one of the experts on the planet on pain and pets, Dr. Robin Downing, for me to know and you never to find out, Cats in Pain, September 23rd. Check it out, Wynn, W-I-N-N, felinefoundation.org.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You've heard about mail delivery services, right? And concerns about the United States Postal Service. So a family in Toksie, Alabama, say they were not receiving their mail, and they insisted it was not being delivered. And the post office said, we know it is. Someone must be taking your mail. And they said, no, who would want? Well, it turns out the post office this time around, it was right. Had nothing to do with the Postal Service being culpable or sorting machines or anything like that. It turns out it was Chester, the neighbor's goat, who had a taste for items like electric bills and ads from the local supermarket. So, you see, it's not always the mail's fault. Sometimes it is, but not always their fault. Next week on the show, picking up on what Dr. Farbel and I talked about this week regarding pet stores and that whole, you know, it's so complicated. It really is. Oh, to me, it's very simple. I mean, if they're getting animals from puppy mills, and they are, yeah, that's wrong, and there's an ethical issue. Having said that, let's look into a crystal ball. Next week on the show, Mark Cushing will be here. He wrote a book called Pet Nation. And the Pet Nation, America's changing, and there is more and more demand for more dogs and cats. Where are we going to get them from? Well, maybe not pet stores, but he says, well, maybe they should be pet stores. You know, maybe even shelters should be breeding animals. What? We'll talk with Mark Cushing about this fascinating yet controversial book next week at 5:30 on Steve Dale's Pet World.